Hi, it's Eric. Welcome to the podcast. Thanks for finding us. You remember to hashtag subscribe and share because a lot of people love the show, miss the show, and I'm like, hey, we're right here. We're doing this podcast now. We can use some adult language. There's no commercials, although it would be helpful if there were a couple of like live sponsorship reads. Hey, Dr. Frankel, go see Dr. Frankel because he will take care of your teeth, make sure your gums are all good. And I just did a commercial because Eric's got to pay for things some way, somehow. Thank you for being here. A couple of weeks ago, I saw an article in The Blade, a two-part series about soccer in Toledo and how the USL was exploring potential expansion cities and Toledo was considered. There were quotes in there from the Mudhens and Joe Napoli. Detroit City Football Club, which is happening now up in Detroit, and how they have organically grown and built a fan base, and there's MLS consideration for Detroit. There was a two-part series, hooked up with a couple of guys, but apologize first to Sean, Full 90 Soccer, Full 90 on Twitter, their soccer parties for like the Premier League and big soccer games that happen at the Village Idiot. And I said, of all the advocacy I've done in Toledo, mental health, animals, any other community efforts that I have a passion for, Toledo Soup, Jewish Federation of Toledo, soccer. I get into soccer, maybe not MLS, but big international soccer as we're on the precipice of the World Cup. And I apologize to Sean, said, I want to advocate for this. How can I be a part of maybe getting us a pro team here? As a friend of mine helped make it happen up in Detroit. Sean and Jake, they are soccer experts about what's going on with soccer here in Toledo and as we approach the World Cup. Sean Hoover will say from Full 90.
Sure, I don't care.
Which we'll go into depth with. Jake, what's your last name?
Mercer.
Mercer. Yeah. How did Sean rope you into all this? What did he say? Like, hey, this guy wants to do a podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. So Sean and I actually know each other from Full 90.
Okay.
I've got a local men's team. And they're our jersey sponsor. So.
Okay. So this all stemmed from a couple of weeks ago. The Blade decided to do I don't want to even say an article. It was a two-part series over a couple of days talking about the potential for pro soccer in Toledo. The prospects of it. I know they got some quotes, some lines from the Mudhens who said it's not really profitable in similar size markets, but they're not going to say no at this point. Obviously, they're a great touchstone for anything like an effort like this, and we can move into some more thoughts with that moving along. They also talked about DCFC, Detroit City Football Club, up in Detroit, which actually, it's Hamtramck, a city within a city that has grown immensely over the last couple of years, and now there's something that you can watch on regional TV on Fox Sports Detroit. They're the big pro team in Detroit. So it basically talked about the soccer culture, and I thought the article was fairly well done and at least maybe, you know, planted the seed for some people to go, hey, you know, we've got two successful pro minor league teams here. Maybe soccer's on the horizon. Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I don't think there's going to be like this panacea, like this one moment that's going to make soccer like just hit and explode. Sometimes you have to take some risks and, you know, just kind of put the money forward and believe that the products, you know, the viewership's going to follow. I kind of think of like sometimes a boiled frog mentality where, you know, you get involved with something, you don't know you're actually in it. And then eventually, you know, the frog boils. And that's kind of what I think about, like, with soccer in this area is, like, you just get enough exposure. And sooner or later, we'll start to harbor more interest, more conversation. You know, it's something that it's kind of at a younger age. There's high amounts of people participating, parents going out, parents paying a lot of money for cleats, jerseys, all this kind of stuff. And kids are starting to be able to see soccer at a whole new level, like something that we haven't seen before because we have the internet bridging the Europeans and other cultures, you know, over here. And we have television, like the cable networks that are actually showing almost all these games.
FIFA is one of the biggest video games across all platforms.
Absolutely. I mean, these players are becoming household names. People who don't really like soccer all that much can't even avoid the fact that there is soccer. The big four network, what did you call it, ESPN or whatever, I mean, mm-hmm. they'll start to show, they'll make top 10 plays now.
Mm-hmm.
I remember growing up, for me, it was hard. You know, you'd have one game a week, maybe two games a week you could watch. You didn't really get to see cohesiveness. I couldn't follow one in particular team. It would be really, really hard to do. And at this point right now, it's something where it's just ballooning here. And I think that, you know, you just kind of have to look at the it's at the edge where maybe the demographic shift will be there, where where parents are going to start saying, you know, we're going to continue with soccer rather than implement the idea that, oh, my child played youth soccer and now they're going to go switch over to football or something like that. I mean, it's possible that there's room for all these sports. Mm-hmm. It's really possible.
For sure.
And the mentality of the game is maybe a little bit more respected than it was a couple decades ago when I first got involved. You know, what would I get involved in, like 1984? So I guess that would be like three decades ago. But yeah, I mean, there's less of a stigma attached to the game and certainly more media presence surrounding the game.
We'll come back to Full 90 and what you do with that, which I've been aware of for quite some time. I could just never wake up early enough or not be hung over enough on Saturday mornings, and we'll talk about why it happens then. Jake, maybe one of Sean's followers, when I tweeted him, said, hold on a second. There is pro soccer to a level in the Toledo area. Can you talk about that?
So it's not technically pro. It's an amateur league.
Okay.
So if MLS is a Division I, the league they play in is the UPSL, the United Premier Soccer League, and that's a Division IV level. So they primarily are based with college.
Who are they again? Locally speaking.
Locally, it's Toledo Villa FC.
Okay. Is there another one as well? Or just them?
It's just them right now.
And is this what was mentioned in the article?
In the article, yes.
They're in Sylvania at Pacesetter?
Pacesetter. Mm-hmm. It's a Pacesetter collaboration with a couple of local investors, and they play out at St. John's High School.
Do you want to say something, Sean?
Yeah. Before that, there was Toledo United, who was coming into town, and they were actually from an investor who wasn't from Toledo. I think they were underfunded and didn't have a full fortified plan for how to lift it off the ground. Again, like, I kind of believe that you have to have an ability to absorb losses for a while before you start to cultivate that change.
Like any business.
It's really a test. It's a test of the market. And I think it was really commendable for them to come in and try, but I don't think the business group was had enough of fortitude to keep that going, or enough roots to kind of keep that working. And that came in and it went, and, you know, I mean,
it planted the seeds, though.
It planted the seeds. It gave a lot of people the idea of what it could look like. It wasn't there to, you know, it wasn't able to last in the first year. And so I think there's a lot of trepidation for getting involved with something that seems to be a mystery for a lot of people. And, you know, I know a lot of people who would like to invest in something that would provide a return, but they don't necessarily want to invest in things that they don't quite understand, kind of like Bitcoin or something
like
that.
Right, right. Jake, can you tell me or us a little bit about Toledo Villa FC?
Yeah, so this is their second year. The new owners just came in actually like a month ago, so they're very new to the scene. They play in a very it's a very regional based league. They play teams from Ann Arbor, Muskingen, Indianapolis. It's a national league that's regionally focused, so they'll play these games in their region, and if they come in first or second, then they'll qualify for a national playoff.
Okay. Where do the Toledo Villa FC players, are they local kids?
A lot of them have ties to Pacesetter since they're involved, and also their coach was from Tiffin University. He's their men's coach, so he has a lot of connections locally, so he's got a lot of Bowling Green former players, a lot of Tiffin, Lords, former Owens players have stuck around in the area. They're involved too. So
you said they were USP?
Well, UPSL.
UPSL. Mm-hmm. And then, as the article mentioned a couple of weeks ago, this was the
USL.
USL.
Yes.
That was considering Toledo and a handful of other cities, and that was probably the impetus behind this article being written. And this is a this is pro. That is pro.
That
soccer.
Is a pro. That's pro soccer.
How, if maybe the easiest thing to use is like baseball terminology
yes.
here.
So
MLS is the yes. major leagues.
Yep. USL is AAA.
Is AAA.
So that's and then. So they were talking to Toledo about USL D3,
okay.
which would be like the ECHL for the Walleye,
gotcha.
Or Double A baseball, essentially.
Gotcha. Okay, so, but still quite high level pro high, soccer.
Pro soccer though, and the players.
When you read that article, what were your thoughts? Because it got the hamster in my head running pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I think a lot of people in the area have kind of dreamed about. Growing up in Findlay. Toledo's the closest sports market. You get the Mud Hens, and eventually we got the Walleye coming in after the storm, and that's our region's gateway to the professional world. So mm-hmm. I think it would be another great team to have based downtown, really build some sports community down there as well. And just go from there.
I have an idea to run by you guys. Sean, maybe you saw one of my tweets out to add to this. And I know it's always a money thing, as Joe Napoli alluded to from the Mud Hens and Wall. I said, not necessarily a money-making thing, but they'd be a great partner in all of this. And maybe corporate sponsors are important, and we have things like ProMedica. We'll come back to that in a second. And Sean, I know that you kind of shuffle back and forth between Detroit and Fulton 90 here. What's your take? What's your vibe? How many people come out to and explain what Fulton 90 is? Because one second before we go any further, this is a weird time to gauge interest in soccer, because over the next month people are going to be nuts over it because we're on the dawn of the World Cup.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's so true. So with this concept of the full 90, it's kind of just a dream of mine. As anybody who plays sports, and I don't care what sport it is, you kind of go through progressions and phases in your life. Mine was, player, then player coach, then, kind of just coach and coach fan, and now kind of, transitioning into just fan of the game. And this is just one of those things where I kind of have, over the years, been isolated. I kind of would wake up early, watch games, things like that.
Hold on, go back.
Yeah.
Wake up early, watch games for the real, like, soccer ludite. Why are you waking up early to watch games?
Yeah, I mean, you would go out. I'd go out Friday night, Saturday night, and, keep it up till 2 o'clock in the morning or so, come stumbling back into my place downtown here in Toledo, and make sure my alarm was set, and I'd get up and watch for myself. It would be like Arsenal out of London, and they got to play 5 hours earlier than, their time zone. So, I have to get up, and it's a 7 o'clock kickoff or 7:30 in the morning kickoff. I'm there on my couch watching it. And
so
then,
Premier League games. And more people are learning about, and is televised probably all over the planet, finally including here regularly.
Absolutely. And if we had a later game and I was staying up in Detroit, I would go to the old Miami bar, and the manager would let me in and just watch it on TV. And I started thinking to myself, when I was walking around with my jersey on, and people would bump in and they would want to talk to me, I'm like, well, where are these people meeting up? Where is there a room for a place where soccer culture can grow? Where's a place for us to be able to kind of link up and get together and not feel like we're kind of pushed in a corner or not even recognized? I know that sometimes I would walk into a larger establishment that's designed for sports, and they would quite frankly look at me like, I don't even know what you're talking about putting on TV right now.
We have a Sacramento Milwaukee Bucks game on. We're not putting on your Arsenal Man City game. And if we are, it's in the little black and white TV in the corner.
Right. And, so I was going through this, and it, just over time, you just kind of collect a lot of conversations with people, and you start to read the tea leaves. And I was going to a lot of those DCFC games in their first year, and I was attending Wayne State, and just at the end of the day, I could go, get out of the library and go to Cass Tech High School. It's in perfect location. It's downtown. It was a great place for them to start. And you just see how it kind of multiplied. Exponential growth of that sport and that fan base, primarily because they keep such an open platform, has allowed for a lot of people to start shifting from sports that they would normally, like a football fan, has kind of started to accept the sport as at least maybe not like a full replacement, but another option for them to, you know, keep themselves active.
And you get to watch the best in, literally, well, in most cases, the best in the world when it comes to the Premier League early in the morning.
For but sure.
Watch up and wake up and have breakfast, have coffee, watch the Ronaldos of the world and all these other great players, and you can go on with the rest of your day and still watch your baseball games and your football games. So, you found this place, and it's funny, when I came across Full 90, I'm like, what the hell? How have I not heard of this? Like, where is this bar called Full 90? I'm like, oh, it's the Village Idiot.
Right. You know, I think that one of the things with the Village Idiot and the employees there and the ownership of John and Nikki Schaefer, they are just a different thinking group. They are eclectic. They're open. That is the type of bar that facilitates community involvement. Those owners are very community minded. I started sneaking into that bar just to watch games with a few of my friends, and then it kind of hit me with a conversation with a couple other people who supported me and this idea, and they kind of said, you know, why don't we just do it? You know what? Screw it. We'll lose some sleep. We'll invest our life in this thing, and you know, it's gonna be all right. And so we've done that. We've kind of just started taking over their bar in the morning, trying to see, you know, if we can kind of make the community happier. We get numbers of people out there for big games, like an Arsenal Tottenham game had 55 people at 7 a.m. They're all drinking beer and having fun, and you know, I haven't had that typical hooliganism thing. That didn't transfer over, so we don't have fist fights or anything like that. Everybody kind of understands that, you know, we're there for one reason, and that's to kind of cultivate the sport and kind of have ideas that are passed around within those four walls. And really, it's been pretty cool because, you know, as you noticed us, we started to have other people who wanted to be involved. If you don't mind me telling about some other areas,
by all means,
places, Swig out of Perrysburg has catered food to us. They've provided food for us. They want this thing to grow. The Dirty Bird downtown Toledo and Linda Ball has been just incredible.
Who's
Linda? With us. She's one of the owners there. She has
Julie.
And she has like just some passion for the game that I didn't realize and recognize. It's just through conversation, bumping into people, you know, and we've had some other, you know, facets come through and help us out, and it's been pretty cool because again, this is, I think, all part of bringing in whatever you can in a community to, you know, go under one umbrella known as soccer.
Did you get some refugees from when the Clotta closed?
I can only speculate that would be true. I mean, I think that's a true statement.
I am one of those refugees.
Like, I had seen pictures, and it was probably from the 2014 World Cup, where it might have been the women's, it was like, friends asked me if I wanted to go. I was like, I got work. I don't know if I can get out, but I really want to go. And then I saw pictures of, like, butts to butts, and I'm like, glad I didn't go, because that's a little over my social anxiety head. But I know they closed, and the first thing I thought of was the World Cup's coming up. So you were one of the refugees, Jake?
Yes, I was at the 2014 games, all the USA games and the big ones especially. You know, they moved tables all out of the way. They had, you know, servers like cramped in the corner, and we were spilling out into the mall. I mean, it was packed to capacity.
So you know those people, and I wanted to ask you, I'm going to come back over to you. You know those people. Have those people come over to Sean's Full 90? And what's your pulse on the take of people's interest in soccer in Northwest Ohio?
Well, I think, definitely people are coming over from where we used to be at the Clotta. And, you know, I would show up on a Saturday morning to Clotta, and there'd be like a spattering of people. But now, you know, there's this brand that's Full 90. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone knows this is a soccer-specific bar and time slot. So, you know, people are really coming over. And I think there's always kind of been this desire that there'd be a place that we could call home to say, like, this is where soccer fans come to watch soccer. And I think there's a lot of people who play it who want to watch it in their free time. And that's where how I came into it. And I've been telling my friends, like, you know, we're playing on, you know, Wednesday night, but on Saturday morning we can go. I'll go catch a game, have a beer, hang out, and have a good time. So,
do you think there are the correct seeds here, that the USL thing is feasible, and if you had a hopeful timeline, what could something like that look like? And hop in and try and help out Jake with how DCFC has grown on a potentially, you know, a line that we can mimic.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the seeds are here based on youth participation. I think that if we get the right partners to buy in downtown, you said the Walleye owners and Mudhen owners and
Promedica
potentially could buy in. It would definitely take a community effort to build something up like that. And I know Sean could talk to more about the DCFC timeline. It's a little different. They're really building things from scratch there.
Mm-hmm.
Really starting with, practically, a baseline of, a budget of $50,000 a year, and something with the USL would cost, several $1 million a
right.
year.
So, right.
I'll let Sean speak more to the DCFC side of it.
Sean, can you talk about how they've grown from where they are
Way I look at it is they've made good connections with local companies, local bars like to support into them. I mean, there's some in there that ride, take their bus. They take patrons from the game back and forth. That's a really cool, unique feature. I think that when they started, they started with the modest idea of how they could grow, and it was going to be a slow growth, and that utilizing that high school Cast Tech was a really good idea because it made the crowd look and feel full.
Right.
And somehow, I guess that ties back into the idea of why Detroit probably didn't get their bid, is how do you make a stadium the size of Ford Field look right for a right. soccer environment? You want it to look and feel full. You want it to feel like you are kind of like you talked about the Clidah situation, your asses to elbows, and everybody's just kind of, pardon me if you're allowed
you're
to say
fine.
That word or not.
Yeah, we're totally clear.
All right. So, you want it to feel like tight. You want it to feel kind of like an environment where you're cheering next to somebody, that vitriol is there.
The energy flows.
The energy
person to person.
Is there. Yeah.
One of the things the MLS probably hit on out of the park was we need our own stadiums, but they need to be 30,000 people stadiums. That's when things started to skyrocket. I watched it in Philadelphia with the Union and where they put that. The one out in LA where the Chargers are playing. You're right. Instead of sitting in these cavernous, I remember growing up, we were roughly the same age. DC United in JFK with 90,000 seats. It looked empty, and you're right. But when it's a third of that size, and people can come out there, they want to feel the energy. And energy is what these soccer games are all about. If anybody's ever flipped on a game, you know that the crowd is part of the energy of the game. Rather than home run, strikeout, three pointer, we cheer. The players feed off the energy of the crowd, the chanting, and so much.
Yeah, I mean that right there, the energy's there. Another thing that we were talking about with the youth soccer and stuff like that is parents want to see their kids playing on the field. You have 11 players playing at all times, running, moving around. Same thing, in the pro sport. Baseball, you're waiting for a play to occur, and, 8 guys could be just sitting around waiting for something to happen, and that can be kind of hard. And in another, that's another perspective of the game that's a little bit different, is you get an opportunity for more people to make plays and be a part of it, and there's some energy. And I'm sorry if I went off the beaten path a little bit. Going back to the DCFC feeling, another thing that I said the bar, but it was the march in from the bar was just incredible. Just being behind guys with smoke and flags and wearing road warrior outfits,
right.
and kind of being able to talk in a brash manner and just doing sports in a different way is just unique. It's eye-catching, it's in your face, and it's something that even people who just show up and don't really quite understand all the dynamics of the game, they sense that it's something different. And the other thing that I really like a lot that DCFC did is they listened to the community, and they brought in food trucks, and they utilize things like Blake's Cider Mill for their beer. Their cider beer is local. Everything kind of has a tie-in, and it's really kind of Like, I think it's pretty spectacular, to be honest with you.
And another thing that I think MLS finally figured out was, and I should probably read a book or like some 4,000 word write up on this to echo or affirm my thoughts. But the other thing I thought they hit on was they finally figured out who their target audience was. Maybe rather mm-hmm. than trying to steal from other they people like us, people unfortunately mostly like white people, I guess, but open to all. But you, but 20s and 30s and 40s, people who want to feel young, they want to go out and they want to be part of a game. But they finally established who their audience was, and you can't be at any kind of business if you don't know who you're trying to talk to.
Yeah, I can definitely say. Yeah,
I know the early days in MLS in the 90s when it first started, they would try to Americanize the game.
Yeah.
So like the clock, instead of counting up to 45,
went down.
Down and it would stop at zero. They had shootouts at the end where you would run from halfway like hockey.
Right.
And that's just, in the soccer world, that's like a big no-no.
Right.
So, yeah, they definitely stopped doing some of these Americanized gimmicks, essentially, and you know they would stop having the stadium announcers do mid-game announcements or play music to jazz people up. You know, they just let the fans build their own energy and songs, and definitely create their own atmosphere.
Super serve who loves the game, the exactly. soccer fans, give them that. It was so when I watched that game on Fox Sports Detroit a couple of weeks ago with DCFC. Do you remember the team who they were playing?
St. Pauli.
St. Pauli out of Germany, and that was a beautiful thing as well because that team's known for their open-mindedness. They're kind of like what Bring Your Refugees is kind mm-hmm. of one of their taglines, and they were. They have a good, they're a community minded team that kind of emulates what DCFC's trying to accomplish as well. So it was a cool matchup, it definitely for sure, and it was probably one of the highest level games that they were experiencing playing.
When I watched it to reference again what you said and talking about who the target audience is, like I was like, texted Krieger, I'm like, shit, there's food trucks out there. I'm like, that's like food trucks, craft beer, like. People who put on soccer games are finally understanding and super serving the audience. And when I say targeting white people, you know, whatever, it's open to everyone, but there's a certain person, a certain lifestyle that people live, and food trucks and drinking and cheering are a part of it, regardless of what color you are.
If you say like the term soccer mom or mm-hmm. something like that, you usually envision what you're describing right now.
Right.
And I did. When I came here to Toledo, the reason why I moved to this area was because of my teaching profession. And I did coach for like 7 years in Toledo public schools, the city schools. They don't have what you call organized. I mean, they have some organized soccer, but primarily most of my players did not come from an organized soccer background. I mean, soccer should technically be an inexpensive sport. Mm-hmm. However, I know my parents made a lot of sacrifices, both of time and money, to invest in me playing. And I know, you know, having trainers from England and Trinidad and Tobago, and I don't know how many different countries that would come in, you know, and make livings off of teaching Americans how to play soccer.
Kind of like Americans go to other countries, and you hear stories of like, I have no background, no high level education, but I'm like living well in said foreign country because I teach English.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me run a couple things by you guys, some of my own personal soccer maxims, and get your thoughts on them, and then we'll shift over to this little event that's happening over the next couple of days and why we won something today, and we can explain that. I'm by no means like any kind of soccer evangelist, but when I do use my platform to tell people to embrace it, I'm like, look, one of the things we bitch about most, it's happening in baseball now, this shit takes too long. With a soccer game, I am in and out in 2 hours because the clock doesn't stop. Great selling point, right?
It is.
Absolutely. You can plan your day around it. Totally makes it, I mean, and there, and you know, one other part that was cute, kind of, you know, implied there is there's no timeouts. Mm-hmm. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. You have to play your best players. You deal with what's going on inside the game, and you have to make your adjustments. There's no way to real. And I hope they never do like a TV timeout or anything like right. that in the game. But, you know, as far as I know, you know, that clock just keeps on running, and you can estimate, like, you know, if you're there at 11, you can probably be out by 1 o'clock.
Yep.
That's how it goes.
As opposed to a 1 o'clock football game, which seemed to be bleeding longer and longer into the 4 o'clock hours. As much as we love the thing, you know, it's testing our patience. Another thought I've
oh yeah.
What?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, there is something that's parallel in the football world with both footballs, if you will. Soccer here, and it's, when we play it at our bar, right, when we show it, it's a nice thing because it's once, maybe twice in a week. So it's a lot easier to digest. You kind of have a lot more downtime in your life in between the games. Which, you know, for me, that's, I like having that, because again, I'm a busy person, and
right.
it's kind of like NFL's kind of set up really perfectly that way.
Yep.
Too.
I give my Sunday to it.
The only difference is really NFL has an off season,
mm-hmm.
Where a lot of rumors and things like that, you know, that can generate, they have drafts. I understand there's a lot of other gimmicks that they use to keep the brand alive, but soccer's brand goes throughout the whole year. In fact, almost to the detriment of me, is like some of the guys around the Village Idiot have asked, is this thing gonna stop? Like,
right.
When do they get an off season? And it is kind of confusing for an American populace to understand that there's multiple leagues going on. There's the Premiership, which would be out of England, and then there's a Champions League, which is the best teams of all the best leagues in Europe, and then there's World Cup, and then there's these things like...
Can I give you what confused me? And I would do like you, like 2008, 2009, I think 2008 Euro.
Euro.
I was enthralled by. Disappointed by the 06 Cup because we were terrible, but Euro 2008 had me waking up Saturday mornings the following years. I was like, shit, it's snowing outside. I guess I'll just stay home and watch some soccer until the snow blows over. And I was watching Premier League games. But I was always confused by, I think it's the FA Cup.
Yeah.
I couldn't, I'll put the example out in baseball terms. You guys can explain it, talking about these different leagues and why. It would be like the Tigers, it would be like the Yankees playing the Mud Hens for a different championship. And it confused the hell out of me until I figured it out, and it made no sense.
It's my one of my favorite competitions.
Okay. Explain it if you would.
So it's a single elimination knockout tournament with all the teams. So for the FA Cup, all the teams in England would be entered,
every level,
any level, like amateur, semi-pro, professional. Everyone's involved.
So it could be like
so going with their baseball example, yeah, the Yankees are going to be playing the Lehigh Valley, what are they,
the Iron Pigs?
Yeah, exactly. So right. It definitely gives the semi pros and the amateurs their day in the sun to test themselves against the professional players.
On a nerdy soccer note, when there are top level teams, top division teams playing those semi-pros, the lesser levels, what is it, the Coca-Cola division?
Championship,
oh, yeah.
Do the Premier League teams rest their best players and play backups and third level players and training team players?
Sometimes they do, but sometimes it's to their own detriment, though, because those players haven't gotten the game time, and you can't really substitute, training with getting real game time. So sometimes those amateurs rise up and beat them.
Yep.
And we actually do have our own FA Cup, so to speak, in the U.S. called the U.S. Open Cup.
Right.
Which, if you're a fan of FC Cincinnati, they're in the USL currently. They went on a big run last year where they took out the Columbus Crew in MLS, Chicago Fire, and then eventually fell to the New York Red Bulls in the semifinal.
Yeah, we're going back to like USL teams playing MLS teams. And I think also, Sean, you mentioned what just wrapped up recently. Maybe people watched, probably a big day at Full 90 with the Champions League.
Oh, yeah, we thanks for bringing that up. We rent out the Mommy Indoor Theater. We've done that for our second year in a row now. We sell that thing out. It's packed. It is to capacity. It is an excellent party that we throw. We'll be doing that for the World Cup this year, which will be July 15th. And it just has a lot of energy. It has, it purely has people captivated. I'll tell you, we don't really have something where you can get a big screen event like that with movie theater sound is just, it's something that I didn't even think I could do. I didn't even think that was possible. And the nice thing about being indoors is weather, you know, doesn't bother us or anything like that. It's pretty cool.
I did not like watching. It was a great gesture. I did not like watching the games at the ballpark.
The
screen was too far away. The screen and yeah, it was too far away, hard to follow. It was great seeing who else was coming out to watch a soccer game, and I think the U.S. the women's team was a lot more fun because they won. Belgium game was like, is Tim Howard's head going to get blown off? But yeah, it was hard to watch. So I'm looking forward to the final. You can count me in for that. A couple of
I gave you some tickets as part of your
my package.
Welcome package. I got to grease the skids, you know.
two more of these personal soccer things. One is the local thing, but another thing I've always thought, and this has been a thought of mine going way back. One thing that I think could help soccer, and I know that I'm big into analytics, advanced statistics, whatever you want to call it, whether it's baseball or other things. So I believe in all that stuff. And I think still people pervert the term analytics. I'm like, no, you just can't do a second level of math. I mean, so there is growing statistical information in soccer, but for the most part, it's goals, assists, shots, some other rudimentary stats. Americans, as much as we love beer, we love fantasy sports and stats. Stats have driven baseball. I mean, we all know some of the hallowed numbers from history, and I wonder if there weren't more statistics in soccer if it weren't more digestible for Americans.
That's an interesting point, for sure.
Like, we all play fantasy football, or a lot of us do. And we've stopped caring about our teams because we care about, did Tom Brady throw for 320 yards instead of 310? Because I want my bonus points. And I know there's a friend of mine a long time ago invited me to be in a fantasy soccer league. I'm like, I could draft like Ronaldo and Luis Suarez, and then I'd be done.
That's interesting. We do, through our bar, we do fantasy soccer. And the eventual winner of our league this year was from Ireland, and I don't know how the hell he found us, but I thought that was quite interesting.
I can tell you how it was. It was like with the daily fantasy sports stuff, how there were sharks in play.
Yeah,
he sharked all the American dummies.
Yeah,
I'm gonna take their money.
And I think when you talk about statistics, we probably misapply a lot of statistics. Like, one thing that a lot of novice fans might overvalue is things like possession. There's a lot of teams that are based on not necessarily having the ball and counterattacking.
Right.
I mean, those are new concepts that are kind of they're kind of being developed, and it takes like you know a second level of understanding, a little more sophistication about how that works and things like that. So not every game is going to look the same. And in fact, with this World Cup coming around, even novice eyes should be able to look up at the TV and say, you know, a Brazilian team definitely looks different than the way the United States team plays, which looks different than the way the English play. And you can kind of just see that it's like artwork. It's there's some something going on. There's some sort of formula that works between all the players, the interplay and stuff like that. So
I'm gonna do a little World Cup breakdown in a second.
Sure.
A good thought that more stats would make it a little more appealing to Americans.
Probably, I would think so.
I should have answered your question.
Oh,
I think absolutely.
Yeah,
I think absolutely.
And I know that there's a big push in the analytics world to find more measurable data. I know,
right.
Items like expected goals. So if you take a shot from a certain position, what's the likelihood that the ball will go into the goal?
Right. Kind of like how, I don't know how in depth you guys are with basketball, but like the mid-range shot has gone away because it is a low percentage shot, and if you step back 5 feet, you get 50% more
3 points.
It's just like in soccer, we have crosses into the box are a very low percentage pass, so a lot of times you'll see teams get to the end line and then they'll cut it back on the ground now because they don't want to waste their possession. They want to keep it as long as they can.
And if you had like if there was a statistic like for, and there maybe there is, but unless I see it in FIFA, it doesn't count. Like crosses attempted, crosses exceeded, or if there was like, and I guess we'd have to make it up, and maybe this would be too Americanized, but like secondary assists, is that something that's...
I want that. I have, especially with getting involved with these fantasy soccer leagues, I have been screaming for the secondary assist, because a lot of times it's the pass that makes the next pass happen. You know, it's one of those things. It's a beautiful deal, man.
In the NBA, they often reference the hockey assist.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Last thing, local thing. To go back to Could It Work Here, and Sean, maybe I tweeted this at you. I think the ideal place, maybe mimicking what I saw in Philadelphia, where the Union don't play in the city. They play in a suburb outside called Chester. It's underneath a bridge, but it's on the water. And water, for as long as man has been on Earth, has been a great drawing point. And while downtown is getting a little stuffed and the places have already been taken up, if you go up Summit Street a little bit, past Cherry Street, you got all this emptiness. Like in between the Cherry Street Bridge and the high-level bridge, it seems like you could put a 5,000-seat soccer stadium somewhere there. Do you guys know the area?
Yeah. I get that. Yeah.
Just to let you know, my day job is a city planner. So okay. I've
for Findlay or for?
For Hancock County.
Okay.
And Findlay. So I've spent many hours looking at the aerial and saying, wow, wouldn't this be a cool place for a stadium in Toledo? And I'll actually raise you one. I think on the other side of the river where the Storm Arena used to be.
Okay.
I know they're building those.
Some retail.
Retail some and some condos. But there's still some space just north of there.
I'll take that's
that might be, you know, I don't want to speculate because I'm not involved in anything, but
but you have an expertise and you know where soccer fans would go and where it's worked before.
Yeah.
And we love things. People are now, there's no more. When I first moved here 6 years ago, and I lived downtown. I lived next to Home Slice and all these places. People would be like, isn't it dangerous? I'm like, no, it's not. And now I don't hear that anymore because downtown is so welcome and open. Last weekend, I had friends because of the two country concerts, Mud Hen Games. My friend's like, I think downtown Toledo is now broken. Now, a lot of that is because of construction and traffic, but point taken. But yeah, I'll take either side of the river, and I think having a stadium on the waterfront would be beautiful.
Certainly. And I mean, it's... and
write the check, ProMedica, right?
Yeah, write the check. I don't know who would be... who would want to write the check, you know, right off the top of my head. But we have certainly enough corporations. I mean, hell, Jeep is on the front of Juventus jersey out of Italy. So maybe we could have, like, a Jeep tie in there with, you know, a local team.
Jake, down in your neighborhood?
And
Marathon Stadium?
Marathon, exactly.
From what I understand, the name Toledo Villa is what's currently being utilized, but they are open to, you know, maybe expanding it with a different, you know, different tone or a different name or things like that. And so I think the group that's doing the ownership right now is pretty open to ideas, and I think they're pretty receptive to, you know, anybody's input right now, which is really positive.
And their general manager, Chris Black, he's been involved in the local soccer scene for decades.
Superb.
He was at St. Ursula's Academy for a long time. He coached at Greater Toledo. My brother used to play for him. So, you know, he's been around for a very long time. He knows the scene very well, and I think he's going to be able to guide them through the local scene and get things moving a little bit quicker.
One of the things that I think about as well when I make the draw the parallels is, like, after I have a before game thing now with DCFC, and I have an after game thing where I make kind of a ritual of stopping at one place for food and then another place afterwards for like a drink. But it's that connectivity inside of a city where there's multiple things. When I was visiting just down in the city of Toledo at first, it almost felt like there was the Mud Hens. And when the Mud Hens game was over,
everybody
leaves. There isn't, even if it was like a day game that ended at, like, you know, 7 o'clock. I mean, that's dinner time. That could be a time for more entertainment or whatever, but it was like pack it up and leave. And, you know, having more events like that, having more options kind of keeps a flow within the city. And I can imagine, you know, those same people traveling down there will start to find their own niche places that they want to go to before the game, maybe meet up with those same fans after the game. And you know, it was kind of interesting that you floated out a number of around 5,000. I was thinking somewhere a little bit north of that, but maybe that's just because of room to grow. But, you know, something you know, in that maybe I was thinking around 8,000 people, but something that could also maybe have dual purpose mm-hmm. for concert events and things like that. Yeah. That could really be another sales point for somebody mm-hmm. to get involved with it.
And it would be, there's some ballpark concerts, and obviously there's the Promenade Park now, and I don't know how many people fit out there, but if you were to offer 5,000 outdoor seating for a summer concert, you're right, it's another venue, as opposed to being like last weekend in the Huntington Center. Granted, it was like 8,000 people, but outside on the riverfront, it's good optics. Let's slide over, because we might spend a bunch of time on this, and I hope I don't take up too much of your time. And by the way, Sean, when you're thinking, you look like Martin Freeman.
I appreciate that.
I have Sherlock.
At least you think I'm thinking.
You are thinking. World Cup begins in earnest in just a couple of days. There's going to be a big party at the Malmy Indoor Theater for the final. I'll start backwards in Russia. Who do you believe will be playing in that game? If you don't know, the U.S. won't be playing because they were a clusterfuck of several years and they failed to make it. But it's okay, I think. Who is that? I don't know who that is.
This is France.
France Federation of Football. Okay. I had to pick a jersey that wasn't representative of the United States. And when I go back, I think it was 2006, France played Italy. Zidane's headbutt. Right. It was a famous game. I was the only one wearing the French jersey then. I was being made fun of by a bunch of Italians inside of a bar. Why are you wearing that shit on your shirt? And I stayed there, and I was hoping so hard that I could, you know, turn it back around in their face, but it didn't quite happen. And because I think it's going to be France. I mean, the German side looks just incredible. But I'm rooting for France. I have to pick a team. It wasn't, you know, I mean, there's a lot of good storylines, and something that I'm kind of malleable. I mean, as the tournament starts going, if there's some team from Africa, and you know, an African nation's never represented in the final, I mean, I'll be like, okay, you know, I can get behind a good storyline, because I'm not 100% invested in any one side, but I'm going to go with the French team this year.
Against? Do you know the bracket?
I think it'll probably be a Germany.
I think it will be a Germany.
Germany
team.
Or Spain. The four favorites, if you kind of go through the brackets, France, Brazil, Spain, and Germany on the other side. I'm leaning towards Brazil on that half of the bracket with France.
Spain just fired their coach today.
Yeah. Did they?
Yeah, it was very crazy.
Spain's coach. This might be like instant news, but there's a team called Real Madrid. It's like insane. It's one or two in the world, you know, Barcelona,
Cristiano
Real,
Ronaldo's team.
If you've made it this far in the podcast and that's unfamiliar, tune out. You should know Real Madrid if you've made it 45 minutes.
Yeah. So, you know, when he decides to take on that role as the coach, Spain, I guess, just dumped him and said, screw it. You're not 100% behind your nation. Your mind's divided. And these are little storylines that kind of get people hooked in, and you kind of say, oh, man, that's some shit right there. That's something weird, you know. But, I mean, so now you kind of like look at that and say, it puts a wrinkle in. Is Spain going to be affected by that?
And I guess there is no favorite amongst these normal titans from what I've read. And really, only a handful of teams ever win the World Cup. That's the dirty little secret we can talk about. This is actually, at least from what I've read, and I believe it, this is not the best tournament on the planet, because it lets in teams from, like, Australia. And this Iceland team is a wonderful story, but because it opens up to the whole globe, it eliminates some more qualified teams, not necessarily the U.S., but the Euro the 2 years prior is probably the best talent, because it's Europe, right? You guys buy into that? While it eliminates Argentina and Brazil?
I would buy into the notion that it is possibly watered down a little bit. I mean, these South American teams kind of get pinched because there's just so many that are good and they have to eliminate some.
Yeah, there's only 10, and, but they have only five, you know, four spots.
And Australia and Iran wind up in.
Yeah. And I would say that these colors don't run. The United States could easily be in with that 32-team group if they were, you know, if they were in the right initial entry point. And one thing that I would say between the World Cup and like league play, and again, I show league play all throughout the year, and those are all the same players that are going to play in the World Cup, that I really enjoy, it, at least in the league play, is something called relegation, mm-hmm. where you have to be good and you have to be the best to remain in that league. Or else you're dropped and you're replaced by the league below you. And
you lose a lot of money.
You will lose a hell of a mm-hmm. lot of money. And it can really make or break cities. You know,
yeah.
there's in that aspect there with the World Cup, I could think of a lot of teams that you could easily insert Italy or the Netherlands or United States just in. And they would be a better, stronger team, but they didn't make their breaks happen with the groups that they were with.
We can transition, but I'll put you guys on the record. Sean rooting, hoping France wins. Jake going with
Brazil.
Brazil, okay. Safe ones, and when you name the six that they usually win this thing, and it's very unlikely that like Senegal goes on maybe to the quarterfinals, maybe. But not much beyond that. Well, first of all, we're going to host this thing in partnership with our president, two of his favorite countries, assuming that we're all still on the same continent by the time he's done with things, in 2028. We got jobbed out of hosting the 2022 Cup, so everybody can play soccer in 130-degree temperatures. We will be hosting the 2026 World Cup, as announced today, in partnership with Mexico and Canada. And even if we weren't hosting it, I do have a question, because I didn't read all the details. Host countries automatically yes. get in, which Russia might not even make it if they weren't hosting it. So we get in, but it will also expand to 48 teams by then.
Yeah. Yes. I'm not
Let
really...
everybody in!
Yeah. I mean, there are only 200 nations competing, so that's a fourth of the entire world essentially is getting in.
It's like almost. The NCAA tournament where coaches yeah. want it to expand so they can keep jobs, yeah. but whatever. More games, more money. Let me ask, Jake, whoever knows the answer to this. We're getting into that. We're more qualified to get in. Mexico will get in because they I don't know when the last time they missed a World Cup was. Mm. Does Canada get in?
They do.
Really?
Yeah, so depending on if they get in 2022, you know, this could be the first time for them since 1986, I believe. So
and
that was their only time they've ever made it.
You mentioned there's 200 countries that play soccer?
Yeah, 200 federations.
Canada's like a top 100 team?
Yeah, yeah. They weren't in the top six in CONCACAF this our North America, Central
right.
America region.
So good for them for getting in 10 years.
They'll definitely get their chance now.
Yeah, in 8 years. So we got this. I think we beat out Morocco, right?
We did.
Typically, these things are a pain in the butt. That's why all these bizarre, mm-hmm. authoritarian countries like China and Russia host these things because the infrastructure, it mm-hmm. costs so much money. And we're like, hell, we're not paying public money for stadiums anymore.
Exactly.
You pay for it. But we have a lot of this infrastructure in place. So this is a pretty cool thing to host, especially yeah. since we got jobbed, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, for FIFA, this is the perfect location. I mean, we have, you know, hundreds of stadiums that are, you know, 40,000 plus fans can be held in them. So, you know, in Russia, they're building, you know, eight of their 12 stadiums are brand spanking new.
What's the one in the Brazilian jungle? Have weeds grown over it yet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's just, what a bastardization of money. You know, yeah. I mean, just to take it and then just make these things and these big monuments to the game, and then they die.
Right.
White elephants.
We're really, as a country, I mean, we have we don't have 50 nations, but we have a lot of our states are as big as these nations, and mm-hmm. the infrastructure is ready for people to come in from out of town. I'm heading to a game up in Ann Arbor, which may break the record here mm-hmm. for attendance, and that's July 28th. It's going to be Manchester United versus Liverpool, and I can envision 100,000+ people inside that stadium. And even though Ann Arbor is not the biggest city in Michigan, the infrastructure around will have enough hotels, there'll be enough restaurants, you know, there'll be a parking that's ready because we have the facilities for that kind of stuff.
Jake, what I didn't see, I wanted to leave this to you guys. What cities continentally here will host the World Cup in 2026?
So most of your you know, your big American cities are going to be hosting. So like your New York's, your Philadelphia, D.C., Cincinnati local is the closest one to Toledo at the moment.
Who just got an MLS
team.
Yep.
So they're on a high at the moment. You get your Dallas's, your Houston's, your L.A.'s, Seattle, San Francisco. So it's very spread over the whole
I'm guessing
continent.
One city in Mexico will
there,
get
there are three in both Canada and Mexico. So Mexico, it's Guadalajara, Monterrey, and Mexico City. And then in Canada, it's, I believe, Edmonton, Montreal, and Toronto.
Did you study this all today?
I'm a huge soccer nerd, so I just pick up these things.
You know what? I'm not as excited as I would have been for 2022 because this seemed inevitable.
Yeah.
Like, there was no way that we weren't getting it.
Great point. Great point.
Like, it was probably the most irate Americans have ever been about soccer in the history of the country when we didn't get it in 2022 because people are like, Qatar? What? They have to put air... People are dying to build these... Wait, what happened? And rush... So there was no way we weren't getting it.
I have not analyzed what time I'm going to have to wake up to show those games, but I think I'm going to regret every piece of that World Cup. Like, just how did they get that bid? I mean, it really leaves a lot... a bad taste in your mouth. Yeah. There's got to be some payola or something.
Oh my god!
There was
FIFA so
huge
corrupt.
Corruption scandal.
It makes the NCAA look like prescient and wise and savvy and a well-run business. When will these Russia games mostly be played? What time?
I'm looking at the schedule for this week, and we're doing like a soft low opening tomorrow, which is 10:30 is the doors. The game first game is 11 o'clock. So on the weekend, the games will play at 9 a.m., noon, and 3 on Saturday. And then, like, we have a Germany-Mexico game at 11 a.m., so if you're, you know, on Sunday, and if you're leaving church or you just want to wake up and have the brunch time special, come on in, you know. So most of the games are going to be around, you know, 9
morning
till
midday.
2. Mm-hmm. 2 is the latest game that kicks off. Throughout the week, and it's every single day, barring one this month, starting on the 14th and going all the way through. And it's just, you know, one of these quick paced tournaments.
Games every day, like you
games
said.
Games every day.
And I liked it. Do you guys remember where the 2010 Cup was?
South Africa. Yep.
Yeah.
I was doing radio then. I was living in Allentown, a neat little soccer city, Bethlehem FC.
Yeah,
they've got a nice little team going. They play in a high school stadium too, by the way.
Nah.
So I would go into work, go home, watch games in the middle of the day, then go back to work. Or I think we all know where we were when Landon raced down the field and saved
awesome.
Our asses. Mm-hmm. I remember I was so tense, and when I went to work, I was shaking. I can't remember. There's not many sports moments in my life like that, where I had to calm down to get into work and do my job. That was one of those moments for sure.
Did you think it was was it primarily because you were becoming a U.S. fan?
No.
Start to know the names of these players?
Oh, God. I'll give you the birth of my fandom. I remember the 94 World Cup and that stupid dog logo. And I had the video game. I know that we got slaughtered in 98.
Oh, yeah.
And then in 2002... I was up in Detroit in the Fisher Building, and the game that was South Korea, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the games were on in the middle of the night. Guess who was working overnight radio then? Me. So I watched all the games. I remember I got home and I was exhausted. And I think it was the third game, but they were mm-hmm. just about guaranteed to go on to the knockout round. And I'm like, forget it. I know I want to watch Portugal. They're a great team. And I forget who their star player was at the time. I'm talking 2002. It was an older guy.
Yeah, Luis Figo.
That's who it was. Yep. Yes. And I'm like, I'm going to sleep. And I wake up, and I think they won.
The funny thing was we lost our last group game, but Portugal also lost to South Korea.
Okay,
and
okay,
South
that's
Korea
what it was.
Went on their big run, and that was... I think that might have been their first World Cup, and they made it all the way to the semifinal,
yep.
and they were hosting, so it was a very special moment for them.
So the other guy that did overnights, we split, he did half the week, I did the other half. He came in, and I think it was a Sunday into a Monday, I had done a club gig, and we watched the U.S. pretty handily beat Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And at
Wild.
That point, I was sold, and I don't remember as much about the Germany game, but reading back on it, I was like, we were in that game. And that's why 2006 was so disappointing. I was living in Monroe, and I'm like, okay, you know, I've heard all this next step stuff. Let's go. And we show up and lay. We finished 32nd, right?
Yeah.
It was awful. I don't think we scored, right?
I don't think we think we scored one.
It was awful. Yeah. And we had, I think we had as many own goals as we did goals scored offense. It was depressing. And then 2010 was just like heart in my throat with Landon, because the goal with England in the first game, it's like, this is awesome. We're set. And then we're like, we're going to lose to,
It was Algeria.
Third game. Yep. You're like, I know it's very rare when these, you know, 89th, 90th minute goal gets scored, and nobody's running 100 some yards to score a goal. And what the hell just happened? Incredible.
And at that point we were in third place, so we would have been out,
right?
If we hadn't scored it, and we scored it, and we jumped above England into first in the group.
In the final minutes, and then it was Ghana. Mm-hmm. Who has been like a long national nightmare.
The bane of U.S. soccer, yeah.
And it was disappointing because you're coming off all that momentum, and I don't think that they had many shots or shots on goal.
Yeah,
it was like, okay, in four more years.
Yeah, I was listening to another podcast, if you will. It's like a kind of national one, and it was kind of from a non-soccer fan's perspective as well. Big Cat. Barstool Sports, and he was just saying, you know, it's really hard to get behind the United States because we're one of the most ethnocentric countries in the world. I mean, you know, we really want to buy and believe our brand. We have a league like NFL that says World Champs, where we only play in the United States, and you know, we were building up every year, looking like we were going to become this next nation that was going to just start whipping ass. And that's why the women's soccer kind of grew like wildfire for people to get behind, because we were winning. We were beating teams. And the men's soccer, there's been ebbs and flows. And it's hard to, you know, get behind a product that isn't even in it, the World Cup right now. Yeah. You know, I mean,
we're very arrogant sports fans.
Yeah.
And I think if you're not arrogant, you're someone like me who recognizes. I like, if you're not arrogant, we do like underdogs, and the U.S. is certainly an underdog. But so I fall on that. I like to root for us because we're an underdog, and it's great when we beat a Spain or a Brazil in the Confederations Cup a couple of summers ago. But I think there's people like, we're underdogs. You know, we're not going to be that good, so they don't care about it. But the world is a little different place. It's like I say, I'm not watching the Olympics, but shit goes viral on Twitter. And it pulls people in, and that will happen during this tournament, and we will pull people in. And I encourage everybody. You're gonna need 20 minutes. Did you guys read the article on the Ringer? You read it? It's like 4,000 words. It's like detailing everything, every misstep of U.S. soccer, from hiring Jurgen Klinsmann, who I thought would be a savior, eccentric as he was, and to why it fell apart. To I had no idea that. I know you've heard this before. Freddie Adu and so many other players, but Christian Pulisic is the real deal.
He'll be 28 and 26, so he'll be leading us to glory, I think.
Cried in the shower for God knows how long in his uniform after the Panama game, correct?
Yeah.
It's a great article, and it can bring you up to speed as to why we're not where we should be. It was a lot of politics, a lot of infighting, and we'll see where we go.
The fun thing about the 2026 World Cup is that
we're all going to be old.
Well, no, but we're also gonna be old. It'll be the 250th anniversary of the
country.
Yeah, the country. So you got games on July 4th. You know, it could be a very big.
We like our nationalism.
Yes,
we like as the NFL reminds us, as we all hear about that discussion. Right, it's all about patriotism and nationalism. Yeah. I'm not like you guys. I don't know. I wish I had more time. I wish I had more up here in between my ears to follow the EPL like I used to. And I played FIFA online too many times to go, I can't do that. I'll just play against the computer. And I haven't bought a FIFA game, although I know that FIFA's like 20. This is a heads up. FIFA's like $24 now. FIFA 18 is $24 on all the platforms. And the World Cup patch is free. So you get like a free game. Mm-hmm. But did I have decent soccer knowledge?
Oh, yeah.
Did you think you were walking into like an idiot or something?
I think... I am, as somebody who tries to be a facilitator event facilitator here in the area. I think that I learn more from the people around me than I actually know myself, and I'm willing to admit that. And I think you have a real good pulse on the game, especially for somebody who doesn't probably invest all that much time into it. So I think that's really awesome.
Like I kept telling you when this little dialogue of ours began a couple of weeks ago, I was like, I feel genuinely bad that I have not been more a part of the soccer culture. And I think this is a great start. Great to have you guys in. Let me know.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. First game at Village. Or how about this? Full 90, follow on Twitter. A lot of these games are going to be on at the Village Idiot, and the big one capping off the final mid next month at Maumee Indoor.
July 15th at Maumee Indoor, we'll be selling tickets for that event at every single game that we host. I mean, we'll show every single game that is presented online. Like Facebook has our calendar of events and dates and all that kind of stuff. July 10th and 11th are going to be some pretty awesome games to fill that bar. They're the last two, the final four teams. It's a free event. You might as well come out. Yeah, root for your side. Pick a side. I've been telling people that I want to start a playoff beard kind of like thing with hockey, you know, like stealing from another sport and just say, hey, man, until France is knocked out, I'm just going to let my face run wild with hair, you know. So,
last nerdy sports question. If you had to tell people to pick a team that isn't one of the big ones for like enjoyment purposes, Sean, who would you suggest? I know the Iceland's a neat little story.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the Iceland story is really cool. But I want to just kind of like, Egypt. Yeah, Egypt's the story. If Mohamed Salah is, they call him the Egyptian king, right? I mean, this guy is an electrifying soccer player,
Premier League player, right?
Mm-hmm. And yes, he plays for Liverpool, and I think that, you know, it's a nation in Africa. I think it's a nation that has a lot of, it's a nation that has a lot of followers, a lot of people following the game. This guy is kind of a transitional player, and I think that his team, and now that he's able to play, he's been cleared to play. I think this is this is a team that a lot of people can get behind and like.
And I'll add to that, show off more soccer knowledge if I could. One of the men who helped build that program into where it is during this cycle was Bob Bradley, former coach of the U.S. soccer team.
Absolutely.
Jake, who would you pick for a fun team for people to watch?
I think I'm going to go with Peru, actually. Okay. It's their first tournament since 1982, and they had a friendly in Switzerland a couple days ago, and it was a 30,000-seat stadium, and it was packed with Peruvians. Wow. So, and this is before the World Cup is even starting, so I think they're going to bring the party atmosphere to the tournament, and they're a real dark horse. No, there's not necessarily a big name for them, but they fight, and it'll be really fun.
I really could have done another hour with this. So much to talk about. It was great to meet you guys.
Do you mind if I plug something real quick?
By all means.
So if you're watching the games and you're getting the itch to get back on the field and kick a ball around, I got a couple organizations you can look into. One is the Toledo Area Soccer Association, or TASA. They do pickups on Mondays. They have some leagues for the men's open, over 30s, over 40s. I think they have a co-ed league too. So if you look them up on Facebook, they've got some ways that you can get involved. If you're more competitive like I am, there's the Northwest Ohio Champions League. I have a team called Club Toledo. We play on Sundays. If you're looking to stay in an elite competition, look us up on Facebook as well. So.
Awesome. Any final shout-outs, Sean?
I would just say that right now there's a Black Swamp Brigade that is ran by Brett Schwermbeck. I probably am pronouncing the last name wrong, but that guy has a hell of a lot of energy. He beats the drum, he starts the chants, and he really, really, really has been there from day one. And it's a person that I have a lot of respect for the amount of time and money and effort that he's putting into the game and trying to cultivate our fans, fan base.
Yeah. Guys, thank you. Maybe we'll set something up again for maybe like a week before the final, and we can come back and do like a shorter version. And because it's interesting, everything is calm right now, but you guys will be getting a pulse of, hey, like there's soccer stuff going on here because of the World Cup, and you know, we'll reassess things. And who knows, maybe these next 3-4 weeks, the right corporate person will recognize things and think back to that Blade article and go, you know what? In 5 years, this is, or maybe Joe Napoli hears something from the Mud Ends Wall and go, you know what? Let's host a game at the stadium and let's dip our toes in the water. Now is the time.
I really think I mean, in my situation, you just got to try something. I didn't know how many people would start showing up. I didn't know how many people would thank me for being open. And, you know, they started coming, and I didn't even know where they were coming from. I had people coming from long distances away just so that they could congregate with their fan base. And it's been a pretty unique ride.
They serve pizza that early in the morning. I know everybody loves Zula.
Sometimes
Diddy.
We do. Okay. Sometimes we do. Okay. We advertise that. Okay. I mean, to have the infrastructure for the best pizza in the city, it requires some people to be there. And it happens once in a while. Our owner will come in and make it for the fans. And as far as so far, we haven't even been charging sometimes for the pizza. We just go ahead and it's handed out because, you know, there's that love of cultivating the sport. It's been pretty cool. So, yeah, there's a lot of different. Yeah, I mean, a lot of different people who want to get behind this thing.
Awesome. Count me in as part of it. Jake, Sean, thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Travis.
This has been a Cumulus Media and Q105 collaboration. Three unicorns were harmed and lost their rainbows and horns in the production process. We use cookies for various purposes, like eating and flavor for protein shakes. And you have agreed to this and all other secret policies by enjoying the preceding audio content, which we highly encourage you to hashtag subscribe and share. You can click here for all other legal crap. And now hit skip intro to go to the next podcast. Just kidding. It's the See More Episodes option in your app. Q105.